Hey, so at the end of today's podcast, we had Reba McEntire on the radio with us today. So we're going to include the audio of that little talk after the closing jingle. Reba, as she celebrates the relaunch of Rumor Has It. Pretty cool.
And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba. They have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind. So they have an extra one, and that's how we
get the podcast.
The podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba's podcast. The podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba's podcast.
I just got a notification that Big D and Bubba are live on Facebook right now. Look at that. If you are not following us on Facebook, go ahead and do that. That way you can get the notifications and not only listen to it, you have the option of watching it there live. It's pretty cool. So this podcast, wonderfully sponsored by the amazing people at O'Reilly Auto Parts, whom I visited yesterday. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I had to go and get... a cabin air filter for my Jeep, because if I didn't change it out, then my warranty would expire. And sometimes. I'm like, oh, that's great. So there is a cabin air filter for a vehicle that the top is off of 90% of the time.
It's hard to get to, isn't it?
It's super easy to get to. But the point is this. Why would you have a cabin air filter for a vehicle that is always in the dust and in the dirt and in the sand and in the mud and all the blah? That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
If you go and the dealership says, hey, you need to change this, don't. It's most cars very hard to get to. Most of the time, back up behind the...
Mine's right behind the glove compartment. It's super easy to get to.
Most are not, and they have to take it apart, and they're going to charge you $85 an hour.
How hard is it to pop your glove compartment off? In the Jeep, it literally is about... a two-second process with no tools.
It is not the same.
Oh, wow.
Most cars, they've got to get back into the dash. It's stupid. And they take it out, and they look at it, and it looks brand new.
Well, I would like to.
Because they think about, what are you going through? This really, unless you're like in the wildfires or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, okay, so you want me to change? I said, why do they even put it in this vehicle? He's like, I don't know. He's like, they just do. Because, I mean, why?
Yeah.
I mean, I have so much dust in my vehicle anyway, so I would like to debut something fantastically so wonderful today.
Are you going to be the longest gold? It's the longest gold we have, right?
So usually the golds are a second to 4 seconds. And the golds, if you don't know what they are, they're moments that happen on the show where we just kind of, whether it's something on air or off the air in the studio, we take it and we isolate it and we keep it. And, you know, years later we'll go back and go, oh, remember this when this happened?
Stuff that makes us laugh. That's all
this lady called up, and she's everything. She's from
it's the voice.
Yeah, it's everything.
It's
she's
the accent
from Big D's hometown. I mean, she is. Just...
Oh, I didn't know she's a cookbook girl.
Oh yes, yes. So she.
I haven't actually heard this.
Oh really, Carson? Did you hear?
Great. No, I've been waiting for it for a couple days.
It's my people. Okay, it's my people. You're about to hear my people.
We would like to go ahead and debut the newest gold, which also happens to be the longest gold of all time.
Good morning. Yes, I've got a comment about the community service that
Gunner,
son
yes.
has to do and this and that. My daughter had to do community service and stuff, and she had to go out and pick up garbage on the sides of the road.
Wait, I want you guys to count the in stuffs.
And stuff. They took him... kept up with the airs and stuff. You didn't get to take and pick and choose what you wanted to do.
Oh, I gotcha.
Then they counted it as an 8-hour day and stuff. You know, if you got sick and stuff, then they took in, you know, you only got like a 4-hour. If you worked 4 hours, you only got 4 hours. You didn't get the other 4 hours, even though it started raining and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, just a little buggy here about that.
So great. It's so great. That's my people, man.
I may have started late, but I got five.
I hit five too.
In stuffs were all over the place. That was my two takeaways. That was my favorite call that day. She had all the in stuffs and she had all the errors. The errors are the best.
I love accents. I love certain regional dialects, and say for instance that, so that's a Middle Tennessee accent. You heard some yuns in there, but you go further to the east, and it's a different thing. It becomes more of an Appalachian type of an accent, and hard R. You get kind of really hard. It's harder to understand. And you go west, and it starting to get into more of a Arkansas, West Tennessee kind of thing. It's just like Louisiana. You have Louisiana. Have so many different accents.
So many different little dialects.
And it's
in
not
there.
Just all one, they're Cajun. No, there are different dialects of Cajun. There are
different dialects from different parts of town. Different parts of the neighborhood. You can tell somebody who's from Algiers compared to somebody who's from Kenner, compared to somebody who's from Baton Rouge, from Houma, to Lafayette.
It's no different than Yonkers and Brooklyn. It's a different thing. And then get Connecticut. That's a different thing.
Connecticut is the most phonetically correct state in the Union, so we actually don't have an accent.
Okay.
It's the people around us, the New York, the Boston, the Maine.
All right, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you notice phonetically and Connecticut are almost the same word?
Yep.
I mean, that's pretty
but
gross.
But no, it's true. Connecticut. You could tell where people were from. It was southern or northern New England, or how far west they were versus east in Massachusetts, because there's a big difference between the New York border and then going all the way over to Boston.
I will tell you that the one that I, because I have a, I don't study it, but I would love to, just kind of at a hobby. I enjoy it, studying it, but Florida is hard for me because there's so many transient.
I was going to say so many transplants that it's really tough to figure out where people are from sometimes.
California, easy. Different parts of California, I start to get a little different. It's harder. Get up into the Northwest. Alaska has its own thing. I think it's fascinating.
I remember watching this whole documentary series on accents, and I didn't think they spent enough time in Louisiana. I'm like, you guys really missed the boat. They kind of washed over it.
In
Louisiana,
to.
People talk like swamp people. All right, fine, fair.
Dude, I remember watching what was it, Waterboy? And you had the one guy who...
Maybe Farmer Fran?
Not just Farmer Fran, but there was another guy who was on the show, and I forget which character it was, but I was like, oh my gosh, that is the worst Cajun accent I've ever heard. And then literally 2 or 3 days later, I talked to a guy and I went, oh my God, that's that guy. I thought it was such a terrible fake one, but it was a dialect that even I had never heard before.
So my mom gets really offended when Cajun people are on TV and they sound like idiots. She it really bothers her. So she's like, she hated swamp people. They all gonna think we talk like that all the time. Yeah,
you do, Mom.
You do. But I remember feeling that way, too. The first time I saw Waterboy, I remember thinking, Farmer Fran walks in and goes, and I went, that's ridiculous. We don't know. And there's no one who talks like that. And one of my brothers goes, you kidding? We have uncles who talk like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh.
It's crazy.
Yeah, but I didn't think my parents had an accent. My mother was an office manager for WorldCom. My dad has a master's degree in civil engineering. We live in the suburbs. I didn't think my parents had an accent until I moved away and called home at 20 years old and went, oh, yeah, you guys all talk like that.
Yeah, you still say Want.
Yeah.
I like this.
My mother says Waynesday.
Waynesday?
It's Waynesday.
It's Waynesday.
It's one of my favorites.
So, listen, I'm going to send you something, Bubba. I follow this guy. He is a coach. He does accent coaching for actors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And listen to him kind of going through and breaking down different actors and their accents. They come to him and help him. Or he's just on this video just listening to famous accents and critiquing them. Watch how good this guy is.
Jew.
Humanity.
Cruel.
We will be cruel to the Germans.
Is fronter in the mouth, so Jew. Humanity. Cruel. He doesn't really get that.
It's what I like to hear.
Nigerian accent.
Will Smith, concussion.
If you continue to deny my work, the world will deny my work.
Smith is playing a real person here.
That's it. That's all I am.
Bennett Omalu, who has a somewhat Americanized Nigerian accent.
Is that all Will Smith playing me?
Smith doesn't seem to be going for Omalu's voice so much as,
tell the truth.
Kind of generalized Nigerian or African accent.
Tell the truth.
Listen to those TH sounds in this.
This is bigger than they are.
They should be dentalized. This, they.
This is bigger than they are.
Impersonation of Truman Capote.
Tony, it just goes on and on and on. But he does like 35 different actors or so. But it's really interesting, and it is hard to try and replicate authentically an accent. You can do the
Keanu Reeves doing the British accent in that Dracula movie. Remember how great that was?
He talks about it and rips it.
Oh,
the guy,
excellent.
He's an Israeli actor who plays Frenchie on The Boys, and that's an incredibly good French accent. Like, it's really good. I thought he was French. I was like, oh, I'm going to be really disappointed if this guy is French because it just means he's just doing it. No, he's Israeli. And that's a whole different...
Well, it's also, it's not even just accents. It's also the way certain things are spoken. And I'm trying to, like, an affectation, because being from Connecticut, that we have a city there called New Haven, which if you're from Connecticut, you say New Haven. Most people, if you're not from there, you call it New Haven. You put the accent on New.
Put the accent on different
Well,
things.
Gilmore Girls is set in Connecticut. And one of the things, they're always talking about going to New Haven. Lorelai, if you were born and raised there like you said you were, you'd know better. And even on Family Guy, they say it wrong. And Seth MacFarlane is from Connecticut. Bro, can you tell your cast that they're putting the emphasis on the wrong part?
It's, how you say it right?
New Haven.
New Haven.
Yeah.
See, Tennessee, it's the same way. If you're not from Tennessee, you say Tennessee instead of Tennessee. It's a small change.
And there's a lot more on the C, Tennessee.
I'm going to call out Good Morning America. This morning I was watching them, and they were talking about Mississippi, and they were talking about Lafayette County. No, it's Lafayette there, because that's where Ole Miss is. And that's
can we just address probably the worst pronounced state in all of the union, and that is Nevada.
Yeah, Nevada. Yeah.
Nevada gets no love, because that's how you know when somebody is from Nevada or not. If they say it right, they go, oh, okay. Everybody says Nevada. And it's you see it all the time. It's the worst. How do you not know? There's only 50 states. How do we not know how to pronounce all of them correctly?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
We don't.
How about
why.
This one? Are you ready for this one? And they even mispronounce this city in media in the same city. I will watch TV and see it said two or three different times going through different channels. Do you guys know which one it is?
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Yeah. New Orleans.
New
if
Orleans.
You're from New Orleans, you say it exactly like I'm saying it right now. New Orleans.
Nobody
New
says Orleans. Nolens.
Nobody says Nolens.
Nobody.
Nobody says Nolens. Or New Orleans.
Yep.
New Orleans. No, it's New Orleans.
Well, sometimes you get, now I will say this, there are dialects and affectations that do say New Orleans. Again,
you ever tracked the Boston connection?
Not many.
The Boston connection to New Orleans?
No, but I have a hard time sometimes. I'll be watching Cops back in the day, and I'd be going, "Oh, look, they're in New Orleans!" Yeah, and then you realize they're not.
They're in Boston.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Or a suburb outside of Boston.
Even I sometimes had a hard time picking out the difference.
And it comes from the people moving from. It was a river thing? I don't know. Anyway, they moved from Boston. They translated it.
A river thing?
I'm not sure.
There's that river that goes from Boston to New Orleans.
Right. I said, I'm like, I don't think there is
a river. I think General Lafayette's name is, there's a Lafayette in every state, pretty much.
And it's different.
Pronounced different.
Yep.
And we would like to thank him for his service, because he really helped America. He did.
I grew up in Louisiana, where the closest city to my hometown was Lafayette. And of course, in Indiana, it's Lafayette, and in Mississippi, it's Lafayette, and in Tennessee, it's Lafayette.
I never understood why, in the Frenchest state in America, they said it wrong.
No one says Lafayette, which is correct. Lafayette. No one pronounces.
That's terrible.
I remember I had to cut a voice piece for a radio station, and in Georgia, I believe. And I did this whole big, like, it was two pages of stuff for me to cut. So I spent, I don't know, it doesn't take me forever, but I cut the two pages. And it's talking about Houston County doing this and that. I cut this whole thing, Houston County Fair and all. Hey, D, yeah, it's not Houston, it's Houston.
Well, then why wouldn't you tell?
Why would you send me something that spells H-O-U-S-T-O-N and not tell me?
And not think to tell us.
Right.
Well, how dare you not know? So I just sent this to, now that is actually M-A-R-I-N-G-O-I-N. And I would like to see how Carson would pronounce this.
Marangoin?
That's close.
That's very close. Patrick, would you like
it's
to?
Marangoin.
Yeah, by no,
it's
Marangoin.
No, it's Marangoin. No,
it's Marangoin. It's Marangoin.
Marangoin. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Dude, I knew that.
Yes, right.
Cookful boy got over Marangoin. One on Barry Kid. Nice.
Sorry. I was going to say something, but I can't say it because people will think I'm being offensive. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. You said, and that's another thing. There are so many little slogans and sayings that
I can't say. You want to say company?
Right. You just can't do it because not anymore.
Well, so when I can't believe I'm going to put my head in the lion's mouth and let y'all make fun of it. But when we did speech and debate, when we were doing
you did speech and debate.
Just move past
we're
it.
On the debate and speech team. Do you have a part of aren't the those morning. Gavels inside there?
Part of the
how many errors were you on it?
We were no errors. One of the things, one of the competitions or whatever, they do like acting. They do drama or humorous interpretation or whatever. And if you wanted to do an accent, our speech coach would not let you just do an accent. Because everyone, when you're 16, 17, you think you can do a British accent or a French accent because you've heard it on TV or whatever. No, you couldn't just go in there and go, oh, I'm going to have a Spanish accent. She had these cassette tapes that were like dialect lessons. And each one was like two or three cassettes. And you'd have to do the lessons and learn the dialect if you wanted to use it in a piece. And I remember the most fascinating one to me was one that was called non-regional diction. I thought, what is non-regional diction? There were cassettes to teach you how to talk like this, how to speak clearly and with no accent.
Yeah.
And that's what they used to teach
how
people
to talk like you're from Connecticut.
Right. So Carson, when Carson went to Ole Miss, they had a class where they taught you how to talk like that. And
the diction coach pulled me aside after the first lesson and she said, where are you from? From Connecticut. You don't need this class. Actually, ma'am, I do.
it's required
to graduate. And she was kind of the same as this guy you were talking about, Dee. She was also an acting coach and would train people in dialects and accents, and she collected them. And there was one girl in my class who was from the lower third of Mississippi, and bless her, she wanted to be an on-camera TV reporter. That accent, she would be able to work in exactly a 50-mile radius in that town. And they offered her extra credit if she would come for an hour, 3 days a week, for 4 weeks to let them record her.
Oh,
because
wow.
they'd never heard her dialect from that area before.
I bet that's fascinating.
Yeah, you look at her and you're like, you're not getting a job. I'm so sorry for you.
Whatever happened to her?
Eight.
Did you follow up?
No. We didn't have Facebook back then.
Yeah, that's true.
I think I know what her last name is, but
and that might have changed.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy to think that you had to take a dialect class if you wanted to do, you know.
Yeah,
but of course you did because in that part of the country, I'm surprised. We
and
didn't
now
have
it's
that
offensive.
At,
now
at
it's
LSU.
Offensive to tell someone that they need to change their dialect.
No, well,
it's offensive. How dare you use your privilege to tell me that I have to change to make you happy? I mean, that's all it is now. We can't do anything.
I want to shift gears real quick. Today is 9/11/2020, and the of course 19th anniversary of the attacks on the America. We spent some time on it today, and I had several program directors reach out to me yesterday asking if we were going to be doing anything about it on the show today. And I was like, well, yes, we will, of course. And I listened around a little bit just kind of hearing what other people are doing, and it was very some were either all – like Beck was all in. Like he was really – as he always says.
If I'm not mistaken, Glenn Beck's radio show started on Monday, September the 10th.
Yeah, and then
Are you kidding me, really?
It happened.
He went national
Tuesday.
On Monday the 10th.
Oh,
and
wow.
Tuesday was September 11th.
Yeah. And then,
wow, that is perfect timing for a talk radio show.
Right?
I mean, that may be –
might have also been Sean Hannity launched the same time or the week before. Same thing. So,
wow.
Yeah, imagine oh, gosh. We were already – doing the show, and I still remember. I remember that day so vividly. I know Carson doesn't like when people talk about what they were doing, but my memory was that I didn't see the second plane hit the second tower because we were going live, and I had called Richard Marcinko, who was our buddy, and he was, you know, SEAL Team 6 and Red Cell.
See, this is a fine story to tell. I'm okay with you saying, yes, we were on the phone with somebody who would be close to this and would know. Again, if you're working a sock factory, I don't care about your 9/11 memory.
I remember calling Richard at home, and he picked up, and I said, do you think you want to, will you come on the air with us? He said, of course. I said, do you think it's terrorists? He goes, too early to say. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to put you on the air. And
we were already thinking it was terrorists.
Yeah, of course. We were like, we were looking at the hole in the building.
We're like, that is not a Cessna, which they were reporting at the time. We're like, that's not a Cessna. That building is way too big, and that hole is way too big to be a single-engine Cessna.
So I just have that memory of holding that handset and exactly sitting in my old desk in the old studio and saying, okay, hang on, I'll put you through in just a second. And then I hear, oh, my God. And, like, this is the toughest, baddest dude I ever personally met. And I could hear the fear in his voice. I was like, why? What? What happened? And he goes, another plane just hit the second tower. And I remember saying, we're going live. Put him on hold and told you guys had no idea.
Yep.
Said, another plane just hit the second tower. Because Richard's on the hotline, and we went live right
back
there.
Back then, we didn't have TVs in every room.
Studio.
I mean, that was like crazy world to imagine
into the news
monitors everywhere.
To look at a 13-inch TV that was the only TV in the building.
Yep.
And we're standing around in the newsroom or in the studio at the news talk station and standing there looking at this little tiny TV, looking at the hole going, this doesn't look right. There's something's...
Yeah, that's crazy.
It still creeps me out, man. Just thinking about that.
It forever changed the world.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Mm-hmm. I mentioned it on the show today. Mm-hmm. I saw a couple silly memes that had already started to pop up. People kind of making fun of it. And, you know, it's...
Carson kind of
disconnected. They don't know. When you're
18 to 25 years old... You don't know what it was like to go through that. And I mean, that's what I did on my social media, on my Instagram. I just said, hey, before you make a funny meme, watch this video. And it was a video showing the people who were trapped above in the floors above where the planes hit. When they had to make that decision of jumping out of the window on the 90-something floor because they figured it would be much better to jump to your death
than to
burn to
die?
Your death. Exactly.
Hearing that noise of the bodies hitting.
That noise was not on that video, but I can remember it so well.
I couldn't figure out what it was. It was just these awful...
You would hear like these explosions.
Yes.
And they're sitting there talking with the news people. And I remember I was watching they were following a fire chief into one of the buildings. I think it was the North Tower. And you'd just hear this crashing sound over and over. And they broke away and they said, the sound you're hearing is the sound of bodies hitting the ground.
Do you remember that we had this? There was a guy who had written a book on stupid 911 calls. And because it was 911, that's who we had on the show. We were interviewing this guy about his book, about these dumb 911 calls, and they had sent us audio. We were playing a couple of them and laughing at it. And then we go to commercial, and we're just sitting there waiting through the commercials, and I remember Matt Kennedy.
I don't remember any of this.
Running.
I remember, we had some.
And he burst into the studio and just screams, a plane just hit the World Trade Center, and then ran back out. And the three of us just looked at each other and went, all right. And then we followed him into the studio to look at the TV.
Yeah, we had just talked to some guy about 911
calls. 9/11. Our 911 calls.
Yeah, and it was like this comedy thing.
It was 911 day.
It was funny 911 phone calls. That's true.
Wow, no, I don't remember any of that. Yeah. You know pastor of the fire department. What do you call the
chaplain?
Chaplain. He got killed by a body falling on him.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh!
That's how he died.
Yeah, a friend of mine. Because I had worked in New York City up until just a couple of months before, so most of my friends were still in Manhattan and Brooklyn and just over in Hoboken, New Jersey. And so a lot of them will post their memories of what happened that day, which is usually pretty graphic visual stuff. And one of them posted today, and I'd never heard his story. And he talked about. He was walking down 6th Avenue, and he saw the fire, and then he actually watched the second plane go in. And he stood there, and he said there were so many of them that just stood because nobody could believe what they were looking at, and that when they saw the debris falling, that it wasn't until they got home hours later and they're watching the news, they realized it wasn't debris, it was bodies.
Oh,
that they, you know, just that they'd seen those shadows. Yeah. But you think because something hit and something's falling off, they just didn't, they didn't realize what they were looking at. And something that struck him was there was a guy who was doing construction on one of the roads. And he just kept his back to it the whole time, just kept digging into the asphalt because I guess he just couldn't prod. Like, whatever was going on around him was too much for him. And all he knew was just keep digging the hole.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I thought about it this morning when one of the news shows was showing the Pentagon with the flag draped over it. And I thought that, to me, was the terrifying moment.
The fact that they hit Pentagon.
Yeah, the Pentagon is the head of the, you know, it's the home base of the United States military, all branches. Like,
it's the brain.
Yeah, that's, yeah, okay, a plane hit the World Trade Center, we didn't know, and then the second one hit, and we knew that it was terrorists and something was going on, but then when the word came down that a plane hit the Pentagon, it was like, oh, God, what's next? They're going to hit the Capitol, they're going to hit the White House,
they were trying.
Everything?
That's what happened with the Shanksville plane.
So that was just so scary, like, oh, God, we really, this is a full-fledged attack. This isn't just we're trying to kill people.
Another friend of mine worked across the street from the Pentagon, and they heard about the first two planes going to the trade centers, and then looks out his window and he saw the plane hit the Pentagon, and they didn't even know it, and everybody just ran. And I mean, like, talking to these folks year after year, and I'm like, honestly, how do you, like, that is forever burned in your brain, because you think about the images that are burned in ours just from television. And these are things that they experience literally firsthand, and I don't know how they even cope with it, let alone the people who have lost folks and were injured or whatever. It's just unbelievable, and that's why I get so irritated with people posting memes or making, again, today's just not the day for it. Today's not the day for stupid comments. No, it would just be cool for one day.
Yes. I saw a tweet today, and it was someone who, you know, hates Trump and showed a video of him saying that, you know, during 9/11, how his building was the used to be the tallest, and whatever. And I was like, dude, can we just have one day? Mm-hmm. Can we just have one day where we don't have one side or the other?
Yeah.
Can we not do this?
Former Vice President Joe Biden and current Vice President Mike Pence run into each other at the memorial and have a nice moment and
can we do this?
Elbow bump each other. Like, like, chill, everybody.
Like, that's
did that happen? I didn't even see it.
Yeah. It did. That's what should happen.
It's a great moment, and that's what we experienced because of our age, because we were part of that era, this generation, is that we saw how America could be after 9/11.
Man, post 9/11 America is the favorite. One of my favorite times too. I've lived through. I know that people think that's crazy. How can you enjoy living? I fondly miss that time where there was the division wasn't like it was now. We weren't drawn across political lines.
Oh, yeah,
I get that
because of the 2000 election.
I said post.
Oh, yeah. No, it all went away.
It all went away. The division was gone. Mm-hmm. Nobody worried about hanging chads. Remember, that was the big thing back then. And I just remember that we all loved each other. Everybody was cool. People were stealing flags. This is the big drama back then. There were people who were getting their flags stolen from their homes because they couldn't buy them in stores because we didn't have enough patriotic stuff to supply the need.
I remember waiting in line to give blood for 8 hours on September 13th. And the point is that I'm in a line with 8 hours worth of people ahead of me. And there's people behind me. And of course, people lined up all over the place to do that. And you know what? There was no complaining, unlike if you go to the grocery store now and you're three people deep and you're getting mad at the woman two ahead of you because she pulled out a checkbook, which I've been guilty of. You know, it's just we had more patience and there was more thoughtfulness. And I think about that day and go, wow, we all stood there and we're like, no, it's cool. We're just going to wait.
I got so mad somebody stole I had a magnet, one of the yellow ribbon magnets with the flag on it and everything. Somebody stole that off my car at the time. I was so mad. I'm like, what?
That's low.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, what do you do?
Everyone has, you know, their memory of where, you know, what they experienced and what they went through on 9/11. And it's our JFK moment for us. It's
our my grandpa used to talk about Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it was monumental. And you know, today on the show, you know, yesterday we really talked. We do every year of how much we are going to do on 9/11 stuff, and
the
not.
Balance is precarious because we're beholden to so many different people. We're beholden to you, the audience, but we're also, you know, we have to be held accountable by the radio station and the different managers and all the different program directors that are involved. And it's weird because you want to continue to remind people what happened. You want to remember what went on. You want to continue to keep their memory alive, those who died that day. But on the other side, we've had people, and I'm not going to name names, we've had people say, like, guys, it's been 15 years, and I just don't think we need to put the emphasis on it anymore. We've had guys do that, and we're like, sorry.
Last year, we got a lot of pushback because we didn't talk about 9/11 all morning. It was 40% of the times we were on the air, we mentioned it.
This year, for some reason, 50%. I feel like this year was different. And I don't know if it's because of what we're going through this year or not, but I found that most media was heavier on the 9/11 stuff.
I think we all want to be reminded of a time where we all, you know, got along and, I don't know, believed in America.
Yeah.
You know,
I think, too, though, for as bad as things might have been these last few months and, you know, coronavirus and everything, that we've been through a lot worse. When you kind of look at it that way, when everybody was living on edge for months and when are we going to get attacked again? And it's your perception of that. But I saw somebody in a radio group on Facebook like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to talk about 9/11. Like, I mean, I wait till next year because it's the 20th anniversary. And I'm like, wow. This isn't somebody's wedding.
Yeah.
This isn't it's not commemorating something joyous. Like,
also, if I'd thought about this before, we would have maybe done more because next year for the 20th is it's a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And the year after that is a Sunday. We'll still do it, but it's just not the same when you're doing it on September 10th. It's just not,
I would like to say this too. You know, I think we all have the betterment of the country at heart, whether you're on the right, the left, in the middle, under the table, over the table, whatever. I think we all kind of want the same thing.
No.
In general. You know, Patrick,
absolutely
I'm not trying to divide. I'm trying to unite here.
That's cute, but it's wrong.
I think we have just different routes to get there. We all want a strong America. And
I mean, the people chanting death to America in the streets probably don't want a
They don't want
America.
A strong America. But you know what? Okay. But what I'm saying is, you know, you can differ politically, but at the core, we are still American. I mean, that is, people talk about privilege. The greatest privilege in the world is to be born here. And let's not forget that, man. This is the best country in the world. There's a reason people are willing to swim 90 miles from Cuba to get to the shores. Yep. There's a reason people will walk from Guatemala all the way across Mexico to get to our border. There's a reason people sneak in every day. It's because this is the shining beacon on the hill. Yep. And it gets me so mad that we have people trying to destroy
our
country.
None of those people are the ones shouting death to America.
No, they're not. You know who it is? It's 22-year-olds who never had to worry about anything in their life except mommy was mean to me or something. I don't know. You know.
One of my neighbors back home was a Vietnamese dude. Man, they were some of the most patriotic people you ever met because his parents came straight over from Saigon. Mm-hmm. And they love America. And you know what? I love them loving America. So let's just kind of concentrate on that kind of stuff. I'm sorry, Patrick. I still think most people at their core.
Now, you can say that all you want, but you're wrong.
Good,
when you say everybody,
America.
You're wrong. You're being superlative.
It to most.
Most. I did say most.
Fine. But I'm just saying the people setting.
You get far sides on either side. That's enough for
if you're thing. If you're violently, you know, going out and destroying other people's property, I don't think
if you're
you have
preaching
America's
death
best,
to America.
Yeah, I don't
I
think you have
that.
America's best interest at heart. I don't think so. Yeah. I think you're doing it because you're an evil person or really, really misguided. But either way, you don't have the best interests of the country at heart. Sorry.
Well, one day, hopefully, we can experience that post 9/11 without having to go through the pain of the day before.
Of 9/11, yeah. Right.
Because it really was a utopian feel. I remember
going to church that night, like just didn't know they were doing anything, just showed up and it was, of course, it was packed. And people just didn't know what to, people just didn't want to sit at home and watch the news anymore. So people just started going to the church.
Yeah, yeah, you know what? They wanted to find solace in other people. They wanted to walk up to each other and hug and say, hey, we're here. We're together. Let's get through this.
That's when I invited Father Martin to come on the show. He was the first preacher we ever had come and say a prayer on the show.
Yeah.
Father Jerry Martin.
Yep. Good dude.
I remember
man.
That.
Good
Let's
dude.
Pray.
Let us pray. Let us
he
pray.
Had the best little voice.
Speaking
was,
of voices.
He was way more Fauci than Fauci ever was.
The original Fauci.
He, Father Martin had
he
this
was
weird
kind of
cadence.
Grover.
It's like if Grover and Jerry Seinfeld and you mix their two talking styles together. It was very great. It was great.
Anyway, we hope today that you will get some alone time and, you know, think about it and reflect and all that on 9/11 and however way you want to do it. But also, we had a chance to talk to Reba McEntire today on the show on the network, and she was great, re-releasing an album that's 30 years old. And she's Reba. I mean, she's got one name, one word name. She's Reba. We want to play that audio in its entirety for you as we finish up the podcast.
Good morning.
Great. This was the podcast.
How many
but
hours?
Now it's over.
Hours.
That's okay. Stuff. You can listen to the regular show and stuff on the radio
and stuff
every day.
Every day
and stuff. It was the podcast.
Hey, Reba.
Hey, Patrick, how you doing?
Oh, she doesn't want to talk to us. She wants to talk to Patrick.
My goodness.
Oh, fine.
Wow.
Whatever.
Okay.
Hey, listen.
That is.
We got Patrick here.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, Patrick's here.
I'm here.
All right.
Yeah, so here's it's the Patrick Show, and Patrick, say hi to Reba McIntyre.
Take it away.
Hey, Reba, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Can I tell you that one of the first CDs that I remember buying when I switched from cassettes to CDs because I got a CD player for Christmas was Rumor Has It, 1990. I remember it. I used to try to sing along with You Lie, and my voice would crack at the top because it was going through that, you know, change. Yeah, and I couldn't hit that note at the end.
Well, mine did that a lot, too, and I wasn't even going through any change. It's a high note, isn't it?
It is. It is. At the end of that song, you get way up there.
Reba, I don't know if you remember this, but in our studio, we have lyrics painted on the floor throughout our studio here. And one of them is one of Patrick's favorites.
Yeah, Turn on the Radio.
Turn on the Radio. Mm-hmm. And we showed it to you in this is one of my favorite Reba stories, is that she didn't realize that the lyrics were wrong. Because
I didn't realize. When we painted it on the ground, and it's permanently there with the wrong lyrics. But you saved me by pointing out that you had looked up the lyrics online for a concert, and they were wrong on the internet. So it validates my story.
There you go.
It says,
you know, it's so funny when you record so many songs, as I've been so fortunate to get to do. I forget songs, I forget lyrics, and people will come up like on a meet and greet before the show, and they say, are you going to do so-and-so song? I said, oh, great, whose song is that? And they look at me like I'm kidding. And they'll, well, that's yours. And I said, oh, well, I guess I'm not doing it since I didn't even remember the song.
Reba is re-releasing the triple platinum certified album, Rumor Has It. It's out, and it's part of the honor of the record's 30th anniversary. Why this album? Is it just the 30th anniversary and it just kind of fit? Is this your favorite album? Is there something to it?
Well, a lot happened in 1990. I had Shelby in February. And so I was bedridden from December the 6th until the 1st of February. I was having trouble keeping up in there. And so by the time I finally had Shelby, and then we started back on getting ready for the tour, but I had been listening for songs all this time, which was really a great thing to happen. I mean, I couldn't do anything else but just lay in bed and listen to demos and try to find songs for the album. And it was also the first time I'd gotten to work with Tony Brown. I'd been working with Jimmy Bowen before then. So that alone in itself was huge because I love working with Tony. He's just so much fun. And the songs that I found, I loved every one of them. People say, do you find just three singles and then just filler? Absolutely not. I try to find, if I'm putting 10 songs on the album, I want 10 songs that could be singles. So I had all the time to do it. And this album was very special to me. And we wanted to re-release it. It's on the 30th anniversary, and we're thrilled to death that everybody's so excited about it.
What was the story? But you wanted to record Fancy for years, but you weren't able to until you started working with Tony Brown?
Exactly. Because I told Jimmy Bowen, who I worked with before, he said, are there any old songs you want to redo? And I said, yeah, Fancy. He said, oh, I don't think you need to be doing that song. Well, it is about a prostitute. Well, it is about a rag-to-riches song, but it's a great song, great story. I've always loved it. When Bobby Gentry had it out and made it into a huge hit in 1968, I sang it every place I could. And so when Tony Brown said, hey, is there an old song you'd like to redo a remake on? I said, Fancy? He said, oh, my gosh, that's my favorite song. So we did it.
Yeah. Do you think that's your most recognized song? I mean, as a fan, I think that's it. But
oh yeah, yeah, without a doubt.
Do people
and it wasn't
ever
even a number one song?
Do people? It wasn't.
No, number eight.
No, it was not number eight. Yeah.
How is that possible? I mean, that's like the showstopper, and that's it was never number one.
Nope.
When you when you are, I think you're okay. I think you made it all right. When you are, and when you're doing, you're in concert, and you're well known for doing the changes, the costume changes, and the all that. How do you do that? Is it specially made? Are there like weird fasteners? Like, is it Velcro? Are you? Is it just a regular clothes?
No, it's very special made. You could call it. We use everything: Velcro, snaps, little gadgets everywhere. Oh yeah, it's very special made, and it's a lot of practice to make sure that the clothes work the way it's supposed to. Sandy Speaker was a genius with that. So was Terry Gordon. Matt, who did the latest one on the CMA Awards, did a great job with that. It's a lot of fun. I tell whoever's going to work on it, I said, go out there and have fun. Try to find a new way of doing a clothes change for Fancy.
How fast?
Because I've been doing it since 1991 when we started doing the clothes after the video.
How fast can you? Have you ever timed it like a NASCAR?
like a pit stop.
Well, the fastest change is in probably 2 seconds.
What? Two?
Yeah, the dress just drops. 2 seconds.
Wow. Okay, that's really impressive.
Oh,
what's more impressive, though, is to be able to hide the other dress underneath and it not look bulky and weird, and that's where the genius comes in.
Yeah, that's the trick. That's where Terry Gordon did the one for me on our Vegas show, Brooks and Dunn at Caesars. And everybody, even though they've seen the gag, they set up kind of just a little bit straighter, a little bit forward to watch it. And it's so funny. If a person goes, and looks over to the person standing beside them, I thought she was going to, and it's done. And they look back and they say, how'd she do that?
I know. That's so great. Also, congratulations, CMA Award for Musical Event of the Year with Be a Light, Thomas Charette with Reba, Hillary Scott, Chris Tomlin, Keith
Thank
Urban.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What a great song and what a great guy. I've known Thomas Charette since he was a little boy. Narvel used to manage Red Aiken, so I've known him for a long time. Him and Shelby are about the same age, and I've got a picture of him at Bruce Hinton's picnic, and they were out there fishing, just cute as a button.
I was getting so excited about her coming up on the show. I went back and I watched. Do you guys remember when Kenan Thompson of Saturday Night Live was Reba?
Oh, God, that was so
like,
bad.
That was one of the best things ever.
No, it was awful.
I don't know, Reba, what, best or worst thing ever?
Oh, it's hysterical. He is such a talented guy and so nice. I was very flattered he did that.
Well, I'm glad you were flattered. I'm a fan, and I like you, and I like him, and I did not like that. I was like, I don't feel like I like that.
Look, man, here's the thing.
It was all in fun.
Yes, exactly.
You know what? I feel better knowing Reba laughed at it.
And
I
it
do.
Shows relevance and awesome. I actually have a clip right here if you want to.
Out in Georgia. You know it's true. Hey, I'm Reba. And you should vote for me because I'm the real female vocalist of the year. I've toured nonstop. I've been selling records, I've been hauling that Melissa Peterman around nonstop. And you know I need an award for putting up with that. Reba.
Anyway.
That's so great. Now, hey.
I like the way you said tours.
Tour. Let me ask you this. Did you start walking around just going, Reba, after that? Because if anyone could pull it off, you could.
You know, the first time I heard anybody say that was Steve Howey when he did it on the Reba TV show. He played my son-in-law, Van. And he goes, "Grr, I'm Reba." That's the first, and I think that's where he's copying that from. That's
I miss
funny.
That show. Yeah. I like that was like good. That was so great.
Thank you.
The album is available on. You can get it as CDs, but you can also do the vinyl. And I think this is going to be. Listen, if you are a Reba fan or know someone who is a huge fan, this is a great gift for someone. Go ahead and get the album and have the vinyl edition of it. It's of course it'll still be available digitally, but to have that piece don't you miss those albums and being able to hold the albums or going through a cassette tape?
We have a record player at our house, and I love being able to play the album, and it gets to the end, and it makes that little noise, so you have to flip it over and start with the other side. I love all that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then to read all the information on the album cover.
Yes.
And then they have the album cover sleeve inside with an extra picture.
Yes.
You knew all the band members. Everybody who was a part of the album, the creation of it, artwork, and it's so fine print now on the CDs, I can barely see it, but I do enjoy looking at the albums.
And another thing, too, is all that is lost. Like, I used to love, I would listen to the record and or album or cassette or what CDs, and I would read everything. Now, I mean, with the digital stuff, you don't get to read all that. And I know it's like an old man thing, but I miss being able to hear and read and do everything all at once.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it's coming back, because I think the younger generations are wanting what we got to have, that history of the album, more than just a song.
And
they're wanting to know the history of it.
To physically hold the thing that you own, you know?
And say, this is mine.
This is mine, and I'm invested in it.
Yeah. Well, make sure you get it. It's the re-release. Rumor has it the 30th anniversary re-release of it. And again, you can get it available in vinyl, CD, or digital. Reba, thank you so much. We wish you the best and congratulations on this project. And I hope all the best to you.
Thanks so much. Y'all have a great day. Good visiting with y'all too.
Same here. Bye bye.